Okay, welcome everybody. Mordechai Plaska here. Pleasure to be joining you tonight. Just a high-level recap of Parshas Vayishlach. There is just so much to discuss in this week's Parsha, but the overriding theme is how we deal with stress. Yaakov Avinu had a lot of stress, beginning with the bracha raising himself in a home where his twin brother was not, they didn't get along, they didn't see eye to eye, obviously, and told us, we see that the whole episode of the brachas, we discussed that 2 weeks ago, and we also, this was intimated through Rivka Imenu, when she said, Alai Kelafcha B'ni, Alai, says the Gra, is a future for Esav, Lavan, and Yosef, which is what the ensuing parshios all deal with. So in last week's parsha, we see that after staying with Lavan and raising a family there, it was time for Yaakov to move on. And now, without the protection of Lavan, he is at the mercy of all of his chasadim, all of the things that he's done, all of his tzidkis. So now Yaakov Avinu has to leverage all of this. Katonti mikol ha-chasadim mikol ha-emes asher asisi ha-sadaki v'makri avarti yaseh adin hazeh. So Yaakov Avinu plans for 3 episodes, possibilities that may ensue when confronting his brother Esav, who he has not seen in 22 years. Diplomacy, war, and peace. Peace through prayer. And we know that the night before, there was an elaborate plan that Yaakov devised by which he was going to split the camps up and leave the camps that he favored most in the back. And when the night came, obviously, which is when he was planning on doing all of these movements of the camps, nothing seemed to have happened, because the following morning, Esav is there, and all of the Shiftecha, all of his whole entire family, is present to welcome, to greet Esav. So what exactly happened with Yaakov's plan? We don't really know. It seems like the Torah gave us information, but then when it actually came time for it to be executed, it didn't seem like it happened. So what happened was is that there was a fight the night before. Overnight, the Sarashal Esav comes along. And, you know, if you look at the Ben Abachia, he'll say that it was the Ish, that this Ish refers to the Malach Gavriel, which is what we see in next week's Parsha, that Yosef meets this Ish, and that again is Gavriel. But the other Mefarshim, specifically the Arachayim HaKadosh, and others, including the Zohar HaKadosh, all refer to this individual, this Malach, as being the Sar Shal Esav. And so the question is, there's a lot to be said about this, a lot of questions. First it says, Vayivasa Yaakov Levado, Vayovek Ishimel Adolos HaShachar, right? So we know that, why was Yaakov, Vayivasa Yaakov Levado, why was he alone? So the Das Kanim brings down that Yaakov should have known better. He should never have gone by himself. He should have taken his 2 sons with him. Maybe Shimon and Levi, maybe Levi and Yehuda. Whomever it was, he should have taken some, maybe Reuven and Shimon, whatever it was, he should have taken some protection with him, right? Because we know that when a tzaddik is escorted, the mazikin, you know, including this type of episode, never would have taken place. And from there we learn that whenever we have the opportunity to escort someone from our homes, we're required to do so. That's the language of the Das Kanim. The second thing that we have to try to understand is, why did he go back? He went back because of Pachin Katanim, because of these small vessels, these small flasks of oil, which, coincidentally, is what the connection is to Hanukkah, because it was this small flask of oil that later anointed King, you know, King Shaul, as well as David HaMelech, and later on the Maccabeim found this hidden away, which they used in order to kindle light of the menorah. And so this word Pach is also interesting, because the Kedusha slavery brings down the word Pach is the Gematria Peches, is 88. So we have, over the course of 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 days of Hanukkah, we light 36 candles. And then if we add in the 8 for each night of a Shamash, that brings us to 44. And we know that whatever we light in this world is also a corresponding light in the world above us, which is where all the holy neshamas are housed right now, next to the Kanfei Ashchina. And so they're basking in the light as well. So when we light the candles here in this world, they're lighting candles up in Shemayim as well. And so if we take the 44 Neros and we add the other 44, we get 88, which is the Pach. And so this is an inference to Hanukkah and the menorah itself. And when we think about the Neros, we think about Nafshenu Chaksal Hashem, that our souls desire to draw closer to Hashem. The Rashi Tevos of Nafshenu Chaksal Hashem, which is a Nun, a Ches, and a Lamed, is also 88, right? So 50 plus 8, as well as Hashem, is the 30, so we end up with 88. And also, Lahadlik Ner Hanukkah is also the Rosh Tevos of Lahadlik Ner Hanukkah, which is Lamed, Nun, and Ches, is also 88. So that's also a reference to the Pach. So that's how the Kedushas Levi draws in this parsha to Hanukkah. And I hope you enjoyed that little inference. So now that we understand why he was engaged with her, with the Sar Shalesav, we understand now why he went back and the ramifications that we can learn, not letting us out to go alone. We now have to understand what exactly he was facing. I heard a beautiful verse from Shmuel Silver from the Suburban Shul that was brought to my attention by my good friend Ari Wartowski in Teaneck. And he basically said something really novel that we, and also I found something similar that Rabbi Sachs said on the same theme about surviving crisis and dealing with crisis. And when we look at the Avos, we get the understanding that they had fears, they had doubts, and they had all of their trials and tribulations. They were regular people like every one of us, and they went through a lot. So we see that even HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us when asked by Moshe Rabbeinu, what should I tell the people? HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will be what I will be. And that tells us that Hashem is really saying, you're not going to know anything until tomorrow. Like, nobody knows anything. Even we can study the universe and cosmology and all these wonderful things, but we don't know what tomorrow will bring. And so this struggle that Yaakov had with the Sar Shel Esav, explains the Arachaim HaKadosh, refers to the, and why specifically he was hit by Kaf Yirecho, why was he hit by the thigh? In order to take him out of Olam Hazeh, and in order for Esav to enjoy this world, and Yaakov to enjoy the next. Because if you're not able to go out and plow the field and to make commerce and business, then there's no way that you're going to enjoy this world. And so therefore, you'll be relegated, says the Sar Shel Esav, to the Dalda Moshel Torah, which is what you wanted anyway. So this is the way that the Sar Shel Esav was thinking and approaching, as opposed to hitting Yaakov anywhere else or doing any other damage to Yaakov's physique or his body, right? Hitting him on Kaf Yirecho was the way to go, because this would ensure that Yaakov would not be able to enjoy Olam Hazeh, and then he would only have Olam Haba, and Esav will take over Olam Hazeh. There's another interpretation. That's the understanding that I was drawing on from the Rav Soloveitchik, or Shmuel Silber, Rabbi Sachs. Basically, they're saying something a little bit different. They're saying that Yaakov was a non-confrontational type of person, because if we look back at Toldos, and when Rivka Imena says, "Va'ata b'ni shma b'koli," listen to my voice, Yaakov Avinu was concerned about the outcome, because what happens? Ulayi Musheni Avi, maybe my father will touch my arm and understand that maybe this is, you know, maybe it feels like Esav, but it certainly doesn't sound like an Esav. But instead of saying to his father, "Abba, I bought this birthright for my brother for a bowl of lentils, and there's no need for me to go through all of this with you," but instead of having that debate happen in front of him, Yaakov Avinu, being non-confrontational, just said, "Okay, whatever my mother says, I will do." V'yata b'ni shma b'koli, as the Pasuk says, we know, shma b'ni musa v'icha v'altito shtar samacha, don't deviate from what your mother tells you to do. And so that's what Yaakov did. He lived up to the promise. He just went along with the flow, and the brachos ensued, as we all know from Parshas Toldos. And Parshas Vayetze, we have something similar, and that at night, Yaakov Avinu picks up his family and leaves. We know that everything that Lavan had in this world was all the result of Yaakov Avinu. He was, right? Because the Pasuk says, "B'chaisi nafshi b'glalech," I became wealthy because of you. Because the Arachaim brings down in Parshas Toldos, the reason why Rivka Imenu sent him was because she understood that her brother was motivated by money. And up until that point, he had vast amounts of land, but it looked like something probably out of like the Wizard of Oz, the Kansas, like dustbins rolling in the wind. And there was no vegetation, there was no growth, there was no rainfall. So what benefit was it to have all this land? It was more of a liability than an asset. And then all of a sudden Yaakov comes along, and everything Yaakov, wherever he went, he traveled, there was blessing. And even Paro notices this with Yaakov, where the river rose to the feet of Yaakov. In order to touch upon this bracha, Paro misinterpreted, thinking that it was really in his honor, not really the source, which is Yaakov, or didn't want to give the recognition to Yaakov. But the bottom line is that Yaakov brought this tremendous bracha. But when he had to leave Lavan after raising his family there, he decided to do so in the middle of the night because he was, again, non-confrontational. He went away from the stress of having to deal with a conversation with Lavan, who wanted nothing more than to keep him, preserve him, and maintain his presence in his land so long as possible because, you know, he was the gold mine. And now we see in this week's parasha, Yaakov, you know, runs away from the stress of having to confront Esav. doesn't want to have to deal with it. He wants to just move away from it. So the Sashalesa comes along and hits him on the leg. And that means that you can't run. You have to, every Jew at some point in their life has to confront the stresses. A person can't think that they can run away from them, because when you turn around, they're staring right at you in the face. The difficult conversation that you wanted to have with a parent, a grandparent, a sibling, a spouse, a child, whomever it is, it's a difficult conversation to have, but it's a stress that has to be addressed. And this week's parasha, you know, teaches us that a Jew becomes stronger when we confront those issues, when we confront those stress points, and then we succeed. So as Rabbi Saxon had once said, that Yaakov was really wrestling with himself, right? Because the real battle takes place inside of an individual. And once a person is strong inside, then everything outside can be dealt with. But if it's not strong inside, then whatever struggles are on the outside, that person will eventually lose. So Rashi actually quotes this. Rashi's grandson, the Rashbam, also gives an amazing explanation to the wrestling match. He says that, again, like we're saying, that in order for Yaakov to confront the issue that he had in front of him, he had to stop running away. And he had to wrestle with his fears to defeat them. Right? Because we know that Ben Zoma says, Ezo Gibar, Akovish of Yitzra, who is strong? Someone who masters his impulses. So when we go back into the story, and instead of Esav attacking Yaakov, the next day he embraces him. There was no anger, there was no violence. Yes, there was a medrash that said he tried to bite him and his teeth fell out. So I'm sure Yaakov referred him to a good dentist. I'm sure maybe that's where we got the first dentist. But we know that everything that Yaakov feared failed to happen. And was it real coincidence? Or did he actually learn something from the struggle? The struggle is sometimes difficult. We all learn from the challenges that we face in life. And Yaakov learns that he was not going to allow this person to walk away without blessing him. He was not going to allow this pain to just simply happen without something, getting something out of it. And Yaakov Avinu became much more confident when he confronted Esau. And animals themselves sense fear, right? Predators chase those who run away. And the way to safety is to stay calm and still. And so the inner sense of self-confidence and trust doesn't mean that one never has to fight battles, right? It just means that a person eventually has to true up to them and acknowledge them and then address them. And that is probably the hardest part, because crisis happens all the time. And even when a person survives, like Yaakov did, he limped afterward. And so, therefore, by extension, we're not allowed to eat from the Gid HaNasha. What's the connection between the two? They don't really seem to be too closely correlated, but it means that the ability for a Jew to run away from his problems is not something HaKadosh Baruch Hu is looking for us to do. I would even suggest even further that when this whole episode happened with Dina, the brothers said, HaKzoni Yachsas HaKhoseno, we don't allow our sister to be treated like this. They never would have been able to have said what they said and have done what they've done, right? Which Yerach Hayim HaKadosh explains is completely justified. Why? Because no one can take a girl captive like this and for an entire town to remain silent. It's unconscionable. So there was a certain punishment that needed out. And Yaakov addresses this later on in Parshas Vayechi, which we will get to. But the confidence that the brothers had in doing what they had to do, or they felt they had to do, whether they were justified in doing so, again, as a future for a future discussion, comes from the confidence that they understood from their father. And so the confidence comes, really, it emanates from the top. So Yaakov, instead of taking the path of least resistance, confronted his fears, and that's how he succeeded. I just want to close that when I read this essay from Rabbi Sachs, it hit hard, because he's touching on so many of these subliminal points that they're really powerful. That the Avos, they knew exile, they knew danger, they had their hopes disappointed, they had their expectations delayed. At times they fought, at times they struggled, but they never gave up, and they never gave in. And they did not live serene lives like we think that they did. And sometimes they laugh like Sarah did in disbelief that she'll have children at such an advanced age. And sometimes there were times when they feared things, and they trembled, and they wept, and they gave way to anger as well. Because you know what? After all, they're all human beings. They were not angels. And therefore, these are people that are recorded here in the Torah because we can really identify well with them. They weren't saints to be worshipped. They were our forefathers. They were people like every one of us, and they went through trials and tribulations. But they taught us that we could survive. We can handle the pressures. We can handle the challenges, the difficulties, the stress. We can become confident. We can do what we need to do in order to get things done. as hard as it sometimes may be to make a phone call or to address a certain issue. And that's how we become worthy of bearing the name of Yisrael, because Kisarisa Imlokim Batuchal, because you, Yaakov Avinu, you fought with this Sar Shalisa, Batuchal, and you prevailed. Yes, you struggled with God, you struggled with men, but you taught us all that you can prevail. And that, I think, is the most powerful lesson of the Parsha, and perhaps all of Sefer Bereishis, and perhaps the Torah itself. And that's the reason why we carry the name Yisrael, because we carry the name of an individual who never gave up, never gave in, despite all of the reasons why he should and could and just lay it down and walk away. And that is our inner strength. Our core strength is looking back into the words of the Parsha. Yes, he was alone. And yet someone confronted him. Surely his son should have brought them back with him. But Yaakov was alone. He said, you know what, I'm going to handle this issue now. I have no choice. I'm not going to let this Sar Shalisa go. And when I have to see the actual Esav, I'm going to present myself in the most confident manner. I'm no longer running away from my troubles, from my trials and tribulations. I'm facing them head on. And I think that's the amazing bracha that we take with us. And we take this into our week. And we should be blessed with the confidence and the resolve and the temerity and the courage to not only struggle, but to prevail. This is Mordechai Palatzko wishing you the very best, Hatzlacha and Bracha.